the truth is actually words do inspire. Words do help people get involved. Words do help members.
Next, I'll be interviewing Michael O'Shell. Michael is the program editor for the International Business and Economy Program here at NATO's Association of Canada. He's a graduate of Queen's University with a Bachelor's of Arts in Political Studies, where he developed a passion for international political economy, European politics, and human security. Prior to his time at the NATO Association, Michael was the co-managing editor of an undergraduate research journal located at Queen's University. He has also volunteered on a number of conferences with the Center for International and Defense Policy. In his leisure, Michael enjoys participating in Italian cooking and watching Champions League soccer. He plans on pursuing his master's in the field of international relations and global governance, European politics, or economic integration. So, Michael, as a program editor for the International Business and Economy Program at the NATO Association of Canada, one of your articles, The Sick Man of Europe, France's Economic Outlook, was published on September 4th. In that article, you mentioned that the country famous for its fashion, wine, cheese, and tourist attractions is suffering. Unemployment is hovering around 10% of the population. Real GDP growth remains sluggish at 0.9%. Gross public debt is an astronomical 98% of GDP, totaling nearly $2.7 billion. France, even if not deathly ill, is running a fever. Please discuss the significance of this article.
So the original intention and significance of this article was to start a series of articles and spotlights on the largest economies in Europe. Of course, many of these economies are also members of NATO, and so it kind of serves a dual purpose. So thus far, I've highlighted France, Spain, and Italy, and this was the first entry in this series. I think with regards to what I've said is France running a fever, it speaks very much to the fact that unemployment is very high. I know that part of the administration's key goal for the end of the year was to reduce unemployment under 10%, increase real GDP growth, which I guess was originally projected at 0.9%, but might improve to 1.1%. It's still relatively uneasy. And this article is also intended to speak to the fact that France never had to call in emergency loans or debt relief from the European Commission or the ECB. And so as the second largest economy in the Eurozone, the debt crisis was spinning out of control with, you know, emergency funds being granted to Greece and Portugal and Ireland. And so there was quite a number of worried heads of state around the continent that France, the second largest economy and one of the pillars of the Eurozone, was going to need emergency debt relief. And that's quite troubling for a lot of the both economic and political elites of the EU. So this series was supposed to kind of highlight some of the struggles that the largest economies in Europe were going through and are still going through.
In your article, The Sick Man of Europe, France's Economic Outlook, you discuss President Hollande's introduction of the Responsibility Pact. Your article mentions that its key features center on business-friendly tax breaks and lifting restrictions on France's archaic labor market. Approximately $20 billion in tax credits is known to be given to businesses across the country. Coupled with this break, President Hollande's administration proposes a $30 billion reduction in labor costs. Please further discuss the impact of the administration, precisely President Hollande's administration, on France.
So I think there's been a sense, at least in a lot of the media and political and economic observers from Europe and over here as well in North America, that the Hollande administration has been running out of time when it comes to economic policy. He's already midway through his five-year presidential term, which I believe is set to expire in either 2017 or 2018. And so there's really a sense that some of the proposed wider reforms, which are quite interesting, like limiting redundancy payouts, liberalizing retail restrictions on tourist zones, for instance, this is not normal things that we would associate with liberalizing and reforming an economy, there's the sense that some of these things, they might not have a great and total effect, and that should be quite worrisome to the Hollande administration. I think, like many economies in the EU, France is showing very, very small growth. It's very incremental. It's not booming. And I think that there's a hopeful spirit in France that growth will return, but it must be kind of coerced or at least pushed along through reforms to the labor market. So for the Minister of the Economy, Emmanuel Macron, their plans and bills to reform labor, so extending short-term contracts. Originally, companies were only allowed to extend short-term contracts once, and now I think they've upped that to twice, so that's kind of an interesting change on the labor system, which will hopefully allow employers more flexibility with hiring and firing. Likewise, President Hollande has really managed to get the EC, or the European Commission, off of his back, or off of France's back, and really cut down on berating France for missing its budget deficit targets of 2018. And that's definitely been something that the European Commission has struggled to enforce, not only in France, but across the continent, in reminding other European leaders of the need to meet originally agreed upon budget deficit goals.
The budding grapevine, Italy's struggling economy, is another one of your publications. You state that, unlike a great wine, Italy's economy has not improved with age. The Italian economy, the third largest in Eurozone, has struggled since the beginning of the 21st century. Discuss some of the challenges that the Italian economy has faced.
So, really, the Italian economy, unlike many other economies in Europe, has posted extremely slow growth even prior to the European debt crisis and even prior to the global recession in 2007-2008. Italian GDP growth from much of 2000 onwards was pretty much non-existent, or if it was, it was under 1 or 2%. So it really was already struggling to create growth and to move the economy forward in a positive way. So when the debt crisis came along and when the global recession came along, Italy was already in enough of a precarious situation. I think some of the challenges that the Italian economy has faced is not something new. It's something that you can read about online. It's that the labor sector is very, very traditional and kind of closed off. You have to couple this with a very much antiquated constitution that hasn't really been changed much and still very much remains the same as it has when Italy was first created. And so when you get things like 12% of unemployment, or sorry, rather 12% of the working population is unemployed in Italy, and you have a youth unemployment as high as 40%, there's obviously important topics that need to be covered. And this is 14 points higher than the rest of the OECD, is 40% unemployment. And so one of the struggles and challenges for the economy, the Italian economy in particular, is to regulate unemployment and youth unemployment. So to stop unemployment from becoming structural, so that means people that were now seeking employment for more than 12 to 18 months and cannot find employment, that is very much a concern for not only Italy, but many other economies in Europe. Structural unemployment really can be the deficit and the bane of productivity, positive GDP growth, a stable tax base, etc. So I think that if you had to specifically pick one, you know, small thing to really focus in on, that would definitely be an interesting place to start looking.
In order to create better job stability, improve the domestic consumer demand, and in order to create a stronger long-term tax base, what should the Renzi administration focus on?
So, I mean, that's a very, very large question, and it's quite a difficult question, especially there's lots of competing interests in the Italian political system, and it's quite still a fractured system. Not to mention that Prime Minister Renzi is also engaging in large-scale reform of not only the labor market and the economy, but the political system in Italy. Senate reform is inching along, and there's skepticism as to whether that will even be able to be passed in its current form. There is parliamentary reform in numbers of MPs and the pay, and further and further. And so Renzi is both trying to couple an economic reform with a political reform. And I think that one way or another, something is not going to give. I think the opponents particularly in the right and the center right, they're going to expect to get their way on one of the two things. And so I think it bears in mind that Renzi has to kind of make a decision on which is going to be more central and important, not only to the future of Italy, but for his legacy. His 5-year term, I believe, expires in 2018, and so elections will be called then. One of the things that the Renzi administration has really focused on is the introduction of the Jobs Act, which in the Italian context has been likened to, in the media, to Roosevelt's New Deal in the United States. And so it looks to really liberalize the labor market, which has really been, I guess, the bane of growth, according to, you know, political and economic elites for a long time. So the Jobs Act will hopefully liberalize compensation structures, hiring and firing procedures, unfair termination adjudication, benefits and monetary compensation, and unemployment insurance as well. I think personally, there must be a significant review and investment of Italy's bureaucracy and government administration. It has been blamed for being ineffective and stagnant, and I think that there could be more done to address inefficiencies in the system in order to streamline services and cut down on the size. Obviously, Italy is very much a social welfare state, like many other economies and societies in Europe. However, I don't think they need to be mutually exclusive. I don't think that you need to sacrifice one for the other. You can have both. It's just about slimming down, I think.
You mentioned that for the first time since the debt crisis, the wine glass appears half full rather than half empty. Please further elaborate.
Well, I mean, that was kind of a writing style thing that I just like to put in there. But I think there is increased optimism in Italy, both politically and economically. You can see this in France as well and in other recovering economies, but there is an increased kind of belief that Italy can make or break the EU and the Eurozone, especially if you're looking at it from Brussels or from Berlin. What leaders can they trust? And Renzi has shown that he has the political acumen and the political backing to undertake serious reforms, or that at least he is very serious about reforming the economy. And so if you're looking at it from the European Commission's perspective, the European Central Bank's perspective, even Angela Merkel's perspective, Renzi is, I guess, one of the trustworthy ones. And so hopefully that will win him some more time and flexibility to be able to reform the economy. Like many of the other economies of Europe, I think debt reduction is very important. Public debt is very, very high in Italy, like it is in many other countries. And so it must be addressed in order for reforms and for further business growth to continue. Renzi has already reformed the traditional or two-tiered employment structure, kind of which was originally set into short-term small contracts with very little benefits and long-term sort of for life, if you like, contracts with very high benefits and it was very difficult to terminate these long-term lifetime contracts. So I think Renzi is trying to cut back both on the number of temporary contracts and on the number of lifetime contracts in favor of a more middle ground situation, which is something we'd find more accustomed to here in North America or in Canada. The Italian Minister of the Economy, Piercarlo Padoan, he's already come out and stated that from their perspective, the reform agenda is working and it's not only going to keep working, but it's going to start accelerating, and it's going to hopefully be bearing fruit, to quote him. So he's hoping that ideally there will be more virtuous circle of job creation, more confidence in investment, and more domestic consumption, too, to continue to boost the economy. So I think while there is optimism, the reforms must continue, and they can't really let their foot off the gas, so to speak, in the next year or so, if they're really serious about reforming and bringing growth, long-term growth, back to the Italian economy.
Michael, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
It's been an honor.
Maybe you could be a mayor, or a senator, or a Supreme Court justice. You ready? But you might not know that until you join student government or the debate team. And no matter what you want to do with your life, I guarantee that you'll need an education degree. You ready? Let's go. What you make of your education will decide nothing less than the future of this country.